Welcome back to Beta. I'm Doug Gordon. In 2009, rapper Kanye West retreated to Hawaii. In the wake of several high-profile national broadcast embarrassments, he began to work on his next record. The result of his exile was the album My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. It became West's masterpiece. The premier music site Pitchfork.com awarded the album the rare perfect score. Writer Kirk Walker Graves has written the 33 and a third book on the record. He joins us now to discuss the instant classic and how it served not only as a milestone in hip-hop and pop music, but also as an artistic atonement for Kanye's public outbursts.
One of the testaments to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy's greatness is that I think it's sort of an artistic kind of self-acquittal. With that record, there wasn't any artifice in the sense that he was truly, I think, explaining himself the only way that he knew how to explain himself, and that was obviously aesthetically. And the record is a testament to that. It's excessively long. It's almost 70 minutes. It's opulent. There are dozens upon dozens upon dozens of collaborators. It's full of spontaneity. It's full of surprises. It's full of grotesque moments and sublime moments. And it has this sort of gargantuan human comedy element to it that I think I certainly have yet to encounter on another record in this century, at least. And I think that is kind of the reason that it's resonated so much. I know that I think Chris Rock, who appears on one of the tracks on Blame Game, I think he said that he believes it's the most significant record of the 2000s, certainly.
Would you agree with that?
Century.
Would you agree with that?
I think it's up there. Yeah. It's hard to say. The ranking game is kind of increasingly a fool's errand. I think we have so much more access to so much more information, and the reason that all these subgenres exist now is because I think we are just more refined and specific in our taste. But I think certainly if I were going to make a monolithic claim of that nature, I would definitely put MBDTF in the running.
Yeah, and yet, despite his massive ego, Kanye West, in a lot of his music, he's exploring self-doubt, isn't he? How do you explain that?
He is. He's exploring self-doubt, and again, I think that willingness to go to those places and that willingness to really cling to vulnerability like a plank after a shipwreck, I think that people relate to that. I know that I did, and have had certainly multiple instances in my own life when that was sort of a survival mechanism, and I think he does that on that record so well, and it comes across sort of most most profoundly in Runaway, which is sort of the album's kind of emotional centerpiece, and the music, there's a music video, or it's really a short film that was sort of like a compendium of music videos that he co-directed, and it was just called Runaway. That was sort of part of the album's launch, and it's known now for having the iconic ballerinas who are dancing while he's playing piano and singing, and it's one of the most gorgeous, if in my opinion, pop creations that I've ever seen to this day. I mean, it can still make the hair in the back of my neck stand up when I hear those first few notes in Runaway, that stark piano. That song really is about self-doubt, self-disavowal, and really it's just this naked, almost embarrassingly, uncomfortably honest plea for freedom. And I think you don't hear that on many hip-hop tracks, certainly, and really in popular music to that extent. There is such a really vital exploration of these parts of himself that I think most of us, I think, would be loath to represent that way. And again, he does it in such an artful and sonically fascinating and unpredictable way that it's almost impossible not to be transfixed. Run away fast as
you can. Let's talk about the opening track of My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. It's a song called Dark Fantasy. Can you tell me a bit about this one?
Yeah, I can. Dark Fantasy is the first track on the record. It's obviously much like the introduction to a fairy tale in that it begins with kind of a perverse interpolation of Roald Dahl's poem Cinderella from his book Revolting Rhymes, which is a 1982 collection of some revisionist fairy tales.
You might think you've peeped the scene. You haven't. The real one's far too mean. The watered-down one, the one you know, was made up centuries ago. They made it sound all whack and corny. Yes, it's awful, blasted, boring. Twisted fiction, sick addiction. Well, gather round, children, zip it, listen.
Can we get much higher?
So high.
This track is sort of a self-assessment. It has kind of a very focused confidence that I think is not really present on every track. Part of the beauty of this record is that there is something of a kind of a schizophrenic sort of levels of intensity in different tracks and multiple personalities almost, depending on which moment we find Kanye in. This track is kind of an opening statement,
and
sort of setting. It samples vocals from former Yes lead singer John Anderson, and there's a Mike Oldfield song from 1983 called In High Places, and that opening sample is asking, can we get much higher? And there's this sense of aspiration that really defines the song and kind of sort of sets the tone for the rest of the record. There's this sense of you're about to sort of enter a really intense ride, and hold on as tight as you can.
Can we get much higher?
Let's talk about the song Power. Can you walk us through Power? Because this is one of the more important songs on the album, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. In the book, I use sort of the Shelley poem Ozymandias as kind of a prism through which to view Power, because it's very much about how fraught power is with its own fear of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And the poem has always struck me as really one of the more overlooked poems for life, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We get our Robert Frost doses a lot, and I had to read that, I think, in high school, but it always stayed with me. And when I heard Power for the first time, I thought of that. And around the same time that I was writing the book, I think Breaking Bad, the show, was wrapping up, and there was a voiceover of Bryan Cranston in that wonderfully gravelly, omniscient voice as Walter White sort of reading a stanza of Ozymandias and sort of the idea of empire and inevitably kind of bearing the seeds of its own eventual destruction.
Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away.
I'm living in that 21st century, doing something mean to it, do it better than anybody you ever seen do it.
It just fit, and so that song in particular really is the arc, I think, of how Kanye sort of perceives his career. I think that he had achieved a certain status and level of fame and notoriety and even kind of cultural acclaim and achievement. But in the wake of all of the outbursts and the incidents and sort of dealing with his own kind of irascibility, he's sort of struggling to make sense of it. And that song is dark. When there's toward the end of the song, there's a suicidal ideation, a fantasy of jumping through the window and kind of, you know, sort of falling to his own demise. The invocation by, you know, Ozymandias, this long, long, long dead king, you know, sort of boasting about his reign being forever. There's a self-awareness and power
that
I think Kanye sees the fragility of his own status, and I think that's bound up so intimately with this record. It's almost impossible to understand the record without understanding his own awareness of not only his own ego fragility, but also his status, or whether he's beloved or a pariah. I think he knows that none of those things are constants, and powers, it's not permanent.
I wanted to ask you about the song Lost in the World. The success of this song has a lot to do with Justin Vernon of Bon Iver, who, of course, is from our neck of the woods here in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Can you talk a bit about Kanye and Justin, how they worked together to create this song?
My understanding is that Kanye, I know Kanye's claimed in the past that his favorite artist is Justin Vernon, and how much he loves the music of Bon Iver. From what I understand, he sort of contacted Vernon and said, you know, I'm making this album in Hawaii. I would love to fly you out here, and would love to sort of get some contributions from you. And I know that Justin Vernon has gone on record talking about when they were laying down the vocal tracks for Lost in the World, and Kanye sort of wanting it thicker, you know, saying it's not thick enough, I want it thicker. And, you know, what happens is just this unbelievably transcendent alchemy in that song. The introduction is Bon Iver initially singing in this auto-tuned voice that he's, you know, he's sort of a master of. He's his song Woods,
right,
off of his EP Blood Bank,
yeah,
and which is one of my favorite Bon Iver, you know, tracks anyway. But
oh, sure,
it sort of subtly, ever so subtly, shifts into a thicker vocal, and eventually it merges sort of with not Up in the Woods, but Lost in the World.
To slow down time, I'm up in the woods, I'm down on my land, I'm building a steel down the town, I'm lost in the world.
There's this sense of Kanye making this final claim, sort of, you know, again, if this album is an aesthetic self-acquittal of sorts for his own personality, if it's kind of an apology record in that sense, but it also sort of making a claim. I still can't get enough of that track, and so yeah, that track is really kind of all about fusing these binaries within Kanye's personality. And to me, the song has this sort of swirling feel when he's the part where he's actually, you know, rapping, you know, and he's sort of listing these opposites. It has this, whenever I hear it, I kind of see it like a DNA coil, that kind of helix, and these binaries trying to fuse. And it's just, I don't know, there's just something that's intoxicating about that track.
You're my devil, you're my angel, you're my heaven, you're my hell, you're my now, you're my forever, you're my freedom, you're my jail, you're my lies, you're my truth, you're my war, you're my truth, you're my questions, you're my proof, you're my stress and your mama sues, mama say, mama mock the sun, lost in this plastic life, let's break out of this.
The final track is called Who Will Survive in America, and the title comes from the American soul and jazz poet Gil Scott Heron sample that basically makes up the track. What's your take on this one?
This track being the coda to the entire record, this being the final thing that we hear, I think that there's something kind of pulsating and tribal, and you know, certainly tribalism is part of our politics now.
Oh yeah,
it seems permanently, and I think that question, which unfortunately is probably more easily answerable for some now than for others, I think it really it resonates. I mean, this record was recorded, you know, it came out 8 years ago, but hearing Scott Heron sort of just machine gunning that question, who will survive in America?
Mm-hmm.
Who will survive in America? It's chilling. Gil Scott Heron's poetry to ask a question about himself and his own role, and the role for people who feel creatively infinite and unbounded, but who are going to run into the same constraints he has. And so, I don't know, I find it an outward-looking, somber, and appropriate coda for the record. I think it's kind of, it just feels right.
Kirk Walker Graves is the author of Kanye West's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. It's part of the 33 and a Third series.